Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's Holly, and let me just say, I am so stoked to have you guys listening to my podcast. If you are new here, let me just give you another warm welcome. And if you're an OG, you rock for coming back time and time again to listen to these true crime stories. As always, before we dive into the details of today's case, I want to give a shout out to Marissa this week for joining the Patreon family. I know I have legit said it every single week, like the last 4 weeks, but I do this little celebration dance right here in my living room when I get the notifications that someone joins. I feel like I should start recording my reactions just to share with you guys on my Patreon app, because I swear if you guys were like a fly on the wall, you would probably be dying laughing at my little excited dance moves. But anyway, thank you, Marissa, for joining the fam. If y'all want to join, you can check out the link in the description or visit patreon.com/crimewithholly. And for just $2 a month, you can also make me do a funny celebration dance at home and listen to every single episode ad-free. I also have a quick case update for everyone. A Utah judge has finally rescheduled the Corey Richens trial, and it is set to begin on February 23rd, 2026, with jury selection set for February 10th. The case will also be tried locally, despite the defense trying to get a change of venue, as well as the defense trying to get jurors brought in from a different county. The trial was supposed to start back in like March, I believe, of this year, but motions were filed, things were delayed, and I am happy to report that they finally reset that date because this is a trial that I am highly anticipating. I will link the podcast episode in the description of this one so you guys can get all caught up if you haven't listened to that already. But Corey Richens is accused of murdering her husband, Eric, with a fentanyl-laced Moscow mule. So when that trial happens, I am still trying to figure out the logistics of it, but I want to figure out a way to give you guys trial updates. So mark your calendar for that to begin in February. As you guys can probably tell from the title of today's episode, I do have a guest host today, which I'm so excited about this. My good friend Leah D from Least of These podcast is allowing me to share this episode with you guys because when I heard the details from her podcast, I was blown away. This is a case that I had never heard of, and doing a quick search, it doesn't appear that many other creators have covered this case. She did such an incredible job that I just asked her if I could share it directly with y'all instead of just trying to recreate the amazing coverage that she did. She, of course, agreed because she's amazing like that. And so here we are. Not only will I get to share this episode with you guys, but I will also be back on the mic myself on Monday with a Missing Monday case for you guys. Check the description of this episode to find out where you can follow Leah, find her podcast, and listen to her because she is so amazing. She's an incredible friend of mine, and I wouldn't steer y'all wrong. So without further ado, allow me to pass the mic over to Leah D.
Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most, because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D., and today I'll be bringing you the case of Mary Schiavone in Naples, Florida. Let's get right to it. Naples, Florida sits at the southern end of Florida's Paradise Coast. Its white sand beaches stretch along the Gulf of Mexico, and the city is known for its natural beauty and relaxed coastal lifestyle. It's a community full of upscale amenities, world-class golf courses, fine dining, and high-quality health care. And because of all this, Naples, Florida is an appealing place for retirees and senior citizens looking to soak up the sun and enjoy their golden years. While Naples is full of HOAs and gated communities, on the eastern side, there's still a piece of old rural Florida right there near it all. Golden Gate Estates offers upscale homes with palm tree-lined streets and manicured lawns, but not all jammed together like you'd find in a typical suburban neighborhood. The sprawling homes are situated on large plots of land, and right there in the middle of the upscale coastal neighborhood, you can find stables, barns, and high-class country living. I mean, really, there is no place like Florida. Back in 2023, Golden Gate Estates is where 82-year-old Mary and 74-year-old Tony Schiavone called home. The senior couple had a beautiful estate located on 16th Street. They had lived in that home for over 20 years. Family members told Gulf Coast News Now that as Mary aged, her health began to decline. But Tony took his marriage vow seriously and was there every step of the way taking care of Mary and making sure she had everything she needed. 74-year-old Tony was described as an all-around great guy, salt of the earth, and a super sweet man. And Mary, well, she was the life of the party, a warm and affectionate grandma that anyone would be lucky to have. Even as the couple aged, they were always there for their family, especially their grandchildren. May 17, 2023 started out much like any other day for the Schiavones. It was a warm, sunny spring day. Tony left that afternoon to go and pick up groceries, and Mary was home with their grandson, Anthony, who had been staying with the couple. At approximately 2:25 p.m., a call was placed to the Schiavones' housekeeper. She has not been named publicly, so we're just going to call her Sandy to make it easy. Obviously, not her real name. Anyhow, Sandy answered the phone. On the line was Anthony. He told her that he needed her to come to the house and help him clean up, stating that there was a, quote, real mess that he needed help with. Sandy headed to the home on 16th Street. When she arrived, she walked in as she always did, but this time, a horrific scene awaited her. According to police documents, as soon as she made her way inside, she noticed blood on the floor and also blood on the clothing of 34-year-old Anthony Corrado. Alarmed, she asked to see Mary, and Anthony told her that Mary was in the bedroom. She rushed into the bedroom to find a large blue tarp on the floor. Corrado followed behind her. She asked him if Mary was still alive as she began to unwrap the tarp, but she didn't need an answer. As she unwrapped the tarp, she found Mary with a plastic bag over her head. Frantic to try and help Mary, Sandy began to remove the plastic bag, but Corrado told her to stop because she'd just get blood everywhere. Terrified, she then listened as he explained that he needed her to help him get rid of the body before Tony got home. He told her that they needed to put his grandmother's body in her car and take it somewhere to get rid of it. He also asked if she could disable the home security camera system. Sandy told Corrado that they needed to call 911 to get help for Mary, and he told her that that wasn't possible, stating, "I'll go back to prison." The housekeeper asked where Tony was, and Corrado explained that he was at the grocery store and would be coming back any minute, which is why he needed her help. Of course, Sandy wanted no part in any of this, and she needed to get help for Mary, so she thought quickly on her feet. She told Corrado that if she was going to help, she needed to go to her car to get cleaning supplies. As she walked to her car, Corrado followed her, and when she went to leave, he tried to stop her. But thankfully, she was able to escape. And as fate would have it, just a little ways down the road, she spotted a Collier County deputy. She flagged him down and told him everything that had just happened. He called for backup, and in a matter of minutes, police responded to the home. When they got there, there was a car backed into the driveway in front of the garage door with the trunk wide open. It was Tony's car. It appeared he had made it back from the grocery store, and with the open trunk, it looked like he was unloading the groceries. But now, there was no sign of Tony outside. Deputies didn't see Tony, however, it didn't take long for them to locate Anthony Corrado. He was standing outside of the home with blood spatter all over his clothing. The deputies asked him to identify himself, and Corrado told them his name was Dave. Anthony slash Dave was detained, and police made their way into the house. They found 82-year-old Mary deceased in the bedroom with blunt force injuries to her head. And then they found Tony in the kitchen. His body was wrapped in a blanket, and he also had blunt force injuries to his head. But 74-year-old Tony was still alive, still fighting. His injuries were severe and life-threatening, so he was immediately airlifted to Gulf Coast Medical Center. Tony must have made it home in the minutes from the time the housekeeper left to go get help and the time deputies arrived. In a matter of minutes, he was brutally attacked at the hands of his grandson, who had already murdered his wife. The murder weapon, a bloody hammer, was located on a kitchen counter, and investigators noted blood on the walls and floors inside of the home. 34-year-old Anthony Corrado was immediately arrested and later charged with murder and aggravated assault on a person over 65. When they got down to the station, he refused to speak to detectives about the brutal attacks. After the brutal murder of Mary Schiavone and the arrest of her grandson Anthony, 74-year-old Tony fought for his life in the hospital, and ultimately, Tony survived, though his life would never be the same. He had lost the love of his life, and to make matters worse, it was at the hands of the grandson he and Mary loved and had tried to help. You see, Anthony Corrado had an extensive criminal record. This wasn't the first time his grandparents tried to help him better his life, or even the first time things had turned violent. The Naples Daily News reported that at the time of her murder, Mary had an active order of protection against Corrado. While we don't know the exact details that led to that protective order, since domestic violence orders are typically sealed, we do know that Mary filed for the protection on September 17th of 2018. Court records show that 4 days prior to the order of protection, a lawsuit was filed by Tony and Mary against Corrado and a female to get their home back. The lawsuit states in part, "Defendants are wrongfully holding possession of the premises from plaintiffs after plaintiffs demanded that they leave. So Tony and Mary wanted Anthony and his female companion out of their home, but Anthony refused." And further, it stated that not only would they not leave the home, but that Corrado had actually threatened his grandmother Mary. The lawsuit was dismissed in December of 2019 due to a lack of prosecution. It looks like Mary and Tony dropped the issue. Whether that was because Anthony willingly left and then later ended up in prison so they didn't feel the need to press the issue, we'll get there in just a hot minute. Or whether it was because Tony and Mary had a change of heart and wanted to continue and try and help their grandson. I couldn't tell you the reason, but for whatever reason, the lawsuit was dropped. The order of protection, however, was still active at the time of Mary's murder. And at the time of the murder, not only was there an order of protection, but Anthony, who had just been released from prison, was actually out on bond for completely unrelated criminal trespass charges. It was a whole mess. Anthony Corrado had been in trouble with the law since he was a juvenile, his crimes escalating as he got older. He'd been in and out of jail and prison for decades. To get a full picture, we'll have to take it all the way back to 2006, when Corrado was a juvenile. Initially, the charges were petty. Charges like possession of tobacco by someone under 18 and traffic infractions. But like I said, things escalated. In December of 2010, when Corrado was just 21, according to court records, he broke into multiple cars in his own neighborhood. If I counted correctly in his little two-day crime spree from December 30th through December 31st, Corrado broke into 5 cars. And he wasn't even good at it. He was busted by one victim after he broke into her car and used the garage door opener from the car to open the garage and steal a beer. She found him in her garage with the beer in hand. And later, the police found him. When they did, he had $50 in change, 2 steel exercise balls which had been stolen from one of the cars, a bag stolen from another, and a debit card with a victim's name right on it. Of course, Corrado denied that he had stolen anything and claimed the 2 exercise balls were actually a gift from his grandma, and the debit card was a friend's who gave him permission to use it. The police didn't buy the bullshit he was selling, and he was charged with 5 counts of burglary and 4 counts of petty theft. While on furlough from prison, which furlough is just a temporary release from incarceration, and we don't exactly know why Corrado was on furlough, but according to court records, he was on furlough the following year in June of 2011. Anyhow, while on his little vacay from prison, police were called to a shopping center after an employee witnessed Corrado brandish a handgun in the parking lot and threaten 2 females. The 2 females were Corrado's at the time girlfriend and her mother. According to a police report, the mom had come to pick up her daughter after she and Corrado got into an argument. He was mad and pulled a handgun from the glove box of the car, chambered around so the weapon was ready to fire, and then stated, "You fucking bitch, I should kill you all." This incident landed Corrado with what seems like a slap on the wrist. He was only charged with carrying a concealed firearm, but it looks like he was sent back to prison, or maybe jail. And between this arrest and the next is when the lawsuit and restraining order was filed by his grandparents in the fall of 2018. Fast forward to October of 2019, when Corrado fled the scene of an accident after crashing a truck that was registered to his grandparents. And when he fled the scene, he left behind a stolen Glock and ammo, a hypodermic needle that tested positive for heroin, a small bag of cocaine, and a vial of testosterone, all left behind in the truck he had just crashed. Police found him walking down the road not far from the scene of the accident. He had injuries consistent with the airbags deploying in the vehicle. When he was found, he was carrying a backpack full of drug dealing supplies, like empty plastic baggies, a digital scale, a large bag of weed, some meth, some more steroids, and in his pockets, police recovered 2 pill bottles. One had his actual prescribed medication, but the other had small bags of heroin. He was later positively identified by a witness as the driver of the truck. And that was the icing on the cake, of course. The truck was registered to his grandparents, and he was allowed to use it under the condition that he was using the truck to look for a job. I'm sure drug dealer wasn't one of the jobs he was supposed to be out there looking for, but apparently it's the one he found. Corrado was charged with a lot of crimes, 10 of them to be exact. He was charged with driving with a suspended license and leaving the scene of an accident, possession of amphetamines, drug paraphernalia, cocaine, steroids, more than 20 grams of weed, and possession of heroin with the intent to distribute. Oh, and also possession of a firearm and ammo by a convicted felon. All those charges didn't lead to much jail time, however, because by December of 2020, Corrado was back out there wreaking havoc on the world. This time, he knocked on the door of an off-duty Collier County deputy who was at home minding his own business when Corrado appeared at his door and told him that someone was following him and wanted to kill him. The deputy called it in, and when the responding officer showed up, Corrado repeated the same story, telling the deputy that there were people following him that wanted to kill him. He was acting really nervous as he spoke, and as he was speaking to one deputy, another one watched as he grabbed something from his right front pocket and threw it on the ground. Lo and behold, it was a crack pipe. Well, I guess I don't really know if it was a crack pipe, but the kind of pipe you smoke drugs in. The cops never located the people who were out to kill him, but they did locate two bags with what turned out to be cocaine right in the area he had dropped the pipe in. He must have forgotten to empty out his pockets of his drugs before he knocked on the door of a cop. It's a good thing criminals are usually stupid. Ultimately, Corrado admitted that the drugs in the pipe were his and that he had used meth earlier that day. He was charged with 2 counts of possession of a controlled substance and 1 count of possession of drug paraphernalia. He served 18 months and it looks like he was released sometime in late 2022. After his release in October of 2022, Corrado was arrested and charged with criminal trespass. After he climbed a fence, entered his next-door neighbor's yard, this was at the home of his grandparents, by the way. Anyhow, he scaled the fence and tried to enter his neighbor's camper. He had already been told by this neighbor that he wasn't to come back on his property. But there he was, trying to get into the man's camper. When police arrived, according to the police report, Corrado told them that he wasn't trying to break into the camper, but he heard a noise in the bushes and went to tell them about the noise. He was arrested and charged with criminal trespass and was out on bond awaiting his trial at the time he attacked his grandparents. And before we move on, I just want to note that in between all these arrests and the jailhouse shuffle, if my math is correct, Anthony was charged at least 9 times with driving with a suspended license. And honestly, I lost count of the other traffic infractions. There were just far too many to keep track of. Walking through his criminal record, it was clear that he was on a path to nowhere good and headed there really fast. On November 9, 2023, Anthony Corrado pled guilty to second-degree murder in the death of his grandmother, Mary, and he pled guilty to aggravated battery on a person 65 or older for the attack on his grandfather, Tony. He was sentenced to life in prison on the murder charge, plus another 30 years for the aggravated battery. He is currently serving his sentence at Walton Correctional Institution in Dufuniac Springs, Florida. And that is where he'll spend the rest of his days, surrounded by concrete and steel. No more than a name on some old paperwork, every day indistinguishable from the next, a life completely wasted. As for Tony, though his physical wounds have healed, his life will never be the same. His own grandson took his partner in life away. He stole those final days Tony should have had with Mary. Tony and Mary had done nothing but try to help their grandson. When many would have thrown in the towel, they stood by him, well into their 70s and 80s, even as Mary's health declined. They gave him a home when he needed it, a truck to drive, and endless support, doing everything in their power to help him find his way. They believed in him. All they wanted was to see him succeed in life. But Anthony Corrado repaid their unconditional love and generosity with violence and cruelty. The reason why remains a mystery. Not that there could be any explanation that could justify what happened, but it's also senseless. No one, it seems, but maybe Anthony himself knows why he chose to brutally attack his grandparents on that May 17th day. While we'll never know for sure, it's also possible that even Anthony doesn't know the reason. We do know that Anthony had a history of drug use. Research has long shown a link between violent crime and alcohol and drug use. Surprisingly, according to Boston University, alcohol is the most commonly used substance among perpetrators who commit homicide. But methamphetamines come in second place, and cocaine makes the top 5 list. We know that Anthony admitted to his use of methamphetamines. And I mean, we've seen the criminal record. It's no secret that drugs change everything about a person, stripping away every ounce of who they were. For meth specifically, research indicates that its use is associated with a significant increase in violent behavior. A study published in the Journal of Substance Abuse Treatment found that over 78% of individuals in drug rehabilitation reported engaging in violent acts, including physical assault and use of weapons. In addition to an increase in aggression, meth use can also lower empathy. A study highlighted by News Medical in April of 2024 reported that meth users exhibited lower levels of empathy along with higher levels of aggression compared to users of other substances. This can lead to violent outbursts and erratic behavior, and that risk actually increases during withdrawal or when the drug's effects begin to wear off. The National Institute on Drug Abuse reports that long-term methamphetamine use can result in severe mental health consequences, including anxiety, confusion, psychosis, and violent behavior. Now, let me be clear. I share this not to offer an excuse. There is no justification for Anthony's actions. None. And there never will be. I bring this up to underscore yet again the critical importance of seeking help for substance abuse. Nearly all of us know someone battling addiction, whether it's to drugs or alcohol or both. While it's essential that we stand by them and encourage treatment, it's equally vital that we safeguard those around them until they are well again, especially the most vulnerable among us, children, the elderly, and those who cannot protect themselves. Addiction doesn't exist in isolation. It ripples outward and often has devastating results. Seeking help, whether you're the one suffering from substance abuse or you love someone who is, has the potential to save so many lives. The life at risk due to addiction, but also the potential victims who could be harmed by its consequences. There are so many resources out there to get you or someone you love on a path to being healthy again. In the U.S., you can call the helpline 24/7 for free and confidential help. The number is 1-800-662-4357, or you can visit samhsa.gov. I'll be sure to link the resources in the show notes. And that, my friends, is all I've got for this week. Be sure to join me next Thursday for an all-new episode. I'll be here, same time, same place. In the meantime, you can find me on Instagram at least_of_these or my Facebook at leastofthesepodcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. Man, this is another case that hits me straight in the heart. My granny is 90 years old. She actually just turned 90 the beginning of March. And if you know me, then you know I love my gran. She's been there for me for my entire life. And some of my best days were there in her kitchen, eating all the things, because that lady could cook anything. Unfortunately, she's not able to cook anymore. But nothing makes my heart happier than to be able to whip something up for her just the way she used to do for me. I am not even trying to get emotional, y'all, but I got a soft spot for that little lady. I'm not even gonna lie. Y'all are never gonna believe this, but I was a wayward child. Not in the same way as Anthony. I didn't take things quite that far. But I partied. And I've been known to get a little rowdy from time to time. Not anymore, though. I'm way too old for that mess. But back in the day, oh, Lord. But my granny, she loved me through all that. And she always encouraged me to take the right path, to get my butt back in that church, and to be more kind. And eventually, to just grow the hell up. And I wasn't the only wayward one in my family. I'm not going to name names, but y'all know who you are. But she always tried to see the best in everybody, and she encouraged me to better myself. I will tell you that I am here today because of that lady's prayers. As I was researching this case, I couldn't help but see my own granny and Mary. She'd tried to help her grandson. She and Tony both. It's just so tragic. And there will be some that will say, well, he had a criminal record and she should have just thrown him out. I mean, even when they were helping him, he was crashing trucks and just, you know, messing up. And in hindsight, that's true. She should have just thrown him out. But they didn't just see a 34-year-old man with a drug problem. They saw their grandbaby. They saw 4-year-old Anthony riding a tricycle. They saw him, I don't know, hitting a T-ball, standing barefoot in the kitchen. They loved him, which is what makes addiction so damn hard. Though that person has faded into someone you no longer recognize, the hope is always there that they can get it together. And if they'll just get the help, the grandson, son, daughter, friend, or whatever, the person you know and love will come back. And that is true in many cases. In my own personal experience, I've seen people recover from addictions that seemed impossible. I actually know someone who got sober at like 70 years old. And it was amazing. I've also watched someone I love fade away, and ultimately the addiction took them. Every situation is different, but the goal, of course, is always recovery. And if you've followed me for a while, you know that I believe that no one is ever too far gone. As long as they are still breathing, there is hope. But there's also a balance. Every situation is different, and I'm not here to offer blanket advice. Because what works for one might not work for another. But there's a fine line between loving someone and helping get them into recovery and protecting yourself and those around you. Especially those babies, y'all. And there are professionals that can help you come up with a plan that does both of those things. I can't get off here without saying that not everyone who suffers from substance abuse is violent, because they aren't. But mixing substances, and who knows what the hell is even out there on the streets these days, always has the possibility of affecting even the most nonviolent person and causing a reaction that can put themselves or others at risk. It takes one bad trip, one bad batch of whatever, which is why it's so important to get help now. If you're out there and you yourself are struggling with addiction, or you love someone who is, you're not alone. I see you, and there is help available. Y'all know I love you more than my luggage, and I can't wait to talk at you next week. But until then, bye, boo-fang!